Accession number 17620, James Watts, Reel 9.
Mr. Watts, Reel 9. We're discussing the condition of the men that you were taking command of arriving out of England. They'd seen action prior to this, or some of them had. What was the morale of that unit and the battalion as a whole as you found it?
Well, they have different faces. You don't know whether they're hunted or they are hunting. They certainly have an awareness. And some are very, very edgy. Some need a rest. And at that time, of course, the weather was changing. Winter was coming. And the conditions in which we were living were degrading. The mud was just began more and more, but deepening all the time, you see. So that you kind of get your vehicles and your tanks forward and things like that, and these are very important because, as I said earlier, we crossed the Biferno, we crossed the Trigno. The next objective was the Sangro, which was quite a big river.
Prior to that, though, I don't know if I have asked you this, but just in case I haven't, where was it that you actually joined them? Where, at what point were they then?
Well, it was a little place called Portagononi, not far from Termoli.
And was this a so-called rest position they were in? Or were they in support or reserve or what have you?
Well, you see, the leapfrogging in Italy was hindered by the mountains and the rivers, so that one division would go forward and then the next one would leapfrog them. And that was more or less how we were approaching the situation. But it became evident before the end of the winter of 1943-44 that this was going to be a long and hard fight up the whole of Italy. Because that's once you get to the bottom of the Apennine, just like the bottom of the Peak District, there was a little place at the bottom called Castel di Sangro where we were in barracks there. I mean, the camp, that's where we were stationed. But we didn't do any fighting, really. We were just in a holding position. Because the Germans are similarly placed. There's not much fighting goes on, except slight patrol activity. That means that nearly every night somebody gets knocked off.
Did you have British troops ahead of you at this point? Or were
very
you...
seldom.
At this particular point that we're talking about now, when you actually joined them,
yes,
were you in a frontline situation?
Yes, yes.
And you said, of course, that you didn't dig a slit trench.
Nobody in front of me. You did ask before about someone going at the front and leading. Well, years after the war ended, it dawned on me at one particular time, south of the River Sangro, I could have been the very point of the 8th Army arrow. Because I told the officer to come up and lead the 8th Army.
Well, we'll come to that, of course. So you're in effect, you've joined them in a front-line position. You mentioned the fact that conditions were pretty bleak. What were living conditions like?
Well, we lived in shattered houses with no roofs on. But if it was a house and not a bungalow, the roof could be off, but you could still have some adequate shelter down below. But, you couldn't heat the place, because if you heated it, you sent up smoke. And if you had some shelter like that, that was it. But more often than not, I would just curl up in my gas cape and go to sleep. But we slept on the ground. We had very little shelter.
Movement during the day, was that difficult?
We weren't under much observation at that time, I don't think. I recollect a couple of Messerschmitts coming over, and as I'd been taught, I picked up a Bren gun and I started blazing away at them, and one of the Lancashire Fusiliers said, "Come on, Geordie," he says, "get yourselves a bit down." He says, "He'll come round and start firing back at you." But they went away with the airplanes, and we didn't see any more for a long time. But
so at this point in time when you've joined them, you could at least move around reasonably
well. Oh, yes, yes, yes.
How far were the Germans away from you?
About half a mile.
And where were their positions in relation to your own?
Well, when we reached the River Sangro, they were one side of the river and we were the other.
Was the Sangro the next obstacle for you?
Yes, that was a bigger river than the Trigno.
Had you crossed the Trigno?
Yes.
With them? So you joined them before that river?
That's right, before then.
Can we deal with that area and that before we move
on? We fought at a place called San Salvo. I remember going through a little village called Capricotta where the Air Force had been over with medium bombers. And that was one of the most sorrowful sights I ever saw, was about 8 or 9 children lying out in the little street. It was only a little place of about 10 houses or so, and it had been blasted to bits, you know. That was tragic.
How do you move forward when you are moving? I'm thinking in terms of the formations that you're moving.
You know, I'm wiser now than I was then, because I've read a lot of military history. But all I'm worried about is EO and me lads at the back of me. You don't have much contact with other platoons even. You know, there's a platoon on your right and a platoon on your left. Your company, you might have a knowledge of that, and even the battalion. But outside of that, brigades on either side, other battalions, even the division, you're lost off. And you know, one of the things which I recollect quite easily was, whilst I, from the time that I joined them, till the first time that we had a decent rest, I didn't know the names of the lads. I knew their nicknames. I didn't know their background. These lads were lads I was digging holes with and firing a few bullets off and doing this and patrolling with them, but I didn't know much about them. You know, we didn't get to know one another really. I think we became uncivilized.
In what way?
Well, we weren't learning anything. All we were doing was trying to get to grips with people similar to ourselves, not far away, and to capture them or wipe them out, just for a bit of land. And I don't think we were civilized. The crossing the another thing at that time, it's not so much on reflection, it's not so much the fighting. It's Mother Nature who's penalized you as well, because if you've got a few things wrong with you, such as a cold, anything like that, and you're living out in rough weather, I don't see how so many of us survived it. Because it knocks you out when you're home here in England, you know. But
many men must have got sick. You've mentioned the fact that winter was coming on, the mud, you're in the open.
Yeah.
Did many men suffer from sickness and had to go to hospital or out of the line?
Well,
in your own experience?
Well, you know, one or two of the lads would disappear for some reason or other. They might have been blown up or wounded or something like that, and then they come back and they join, and they usually come back to their own outfit, their own platoon. But I can't remember that. For most of the time we were in a pretty good shape, except for the occasions when such things as dysentery broke out, and then you saw how it grips the very heart of the battalion. You know, it knocks you out. It debilitates you.
What caused this outbreak?
Well, the very conditions in which you live. I mean, the disposal of your excrement and things like that. I mean, that's so important. And then there's all the dead carcasses of mules and cows and such things as that, you know, cattle and sheep, etc.
Did you wake up that very first morning after you'd been told, you know, to lie down in effect? What was the scene that you saw when you opened your eyes that morning?
A lot of tired, lovely men getting ready to go and get their breakfast.
Was it a hot breakfast?
Oh, yes. The more often than not, the cooks did a marvellous job. They were much maligned, you know, our cooks. But, I mean, have you ever thought, Harry, yeah, he's sitting here in Teesdale and there's a division going to go up to Middleton Teesdale. That's about 12,000 men. And then a message comes up, everybody off the road, the tanks are coming through. And everybody's off the road and it's 12 o'clock and 12:30 somebody shouts, grub up. It's a wonderful thing, you know, somebody makes that grub. And you'll see it on the back of three tunnels and 1,500 weights and tanks even. A dirty black can. It might be an old petrol can, I don't know, but that was the brew can. And a tin with a bit of petrol in and the brew can on the top lighted, you'd have a cup of tea. We were always brewing up, you know. But the...
The British Army has a reputation for
tea. No, they like their tea. I think it's a wonderful thing, tea. It's
so a hot meal and tea, as you say, is a morale booster.
Oh, it does. As long as you, if you can keep warm, if you can keep warm and dry, and you've got enough to eat, you can survive a lot. You'll do that because you know you're going to get relieved, hopefully, and get pulled out.
What were you eating on those first mornings? First days?
Bacon and sausage and porridge, of course. Porridge are very important. I'm still eating porridge. It's a very important part of the beginning of the day. It warms you up.
So the quartermaster was getting his supplies through to you? Did you have, when you talk about cooks, was it your company cooks, your platoon cooks or whatever?
Company cooks. And, you know, somebody, it's your cook for the day, right? And you've got to be the cook. And
isn't a cook, it's someone just chosen to be the cook for that day.
I can still remember a little lad called Banks, who was called Monty Banks. Gracie Fields, you see, Lancashire Fusiliers. And he used to sing, and all the monkeys in the zoo couldn't eat old Stredder's stew. That was a lad called Stredder, who was the cook at the time, you know. But after the Trignor, we came to the Sangro.
Can we talk about the Trignor? Was this your very first action?
That's it.
And obviously you had to cross it. How was that done?
Well, I went on about three patrols. You know, you take your patrols out and come back.
Can we talk now then briefly about those patrols? Because the patrols vary, do they not?
Yes,
there are different types of patrols.
Yes.
Can you take me through the patrol activity?
Well... most battalions had a battle patrol. That was about 30 men, pick lads, villains, heroes, anything you want to call them. But they would go out and just cause trouble for the enemy, upset them. Most of the patrols I went out on was reconnoitring, seeing if there was anybody in the farmhouse, any signs of activity, because they were nearly all at night time. We'd go out and we would just listen for noises. You could perhaps hear people digging in or something like that, you know, picking shovels and things. Any activity, any sounds of vehicles moving up, such things as that.
And these would be night patrols, were they?
Mostly, yeah.
How did you dress for them?
Well, I remember taking my boots off and putting my sand shoes on. And... one of the lads says, what are you doing, Jodie? I said, I'm putting me sun shoes on, because I want to move quietly. He says, if you get captured, you're going to have to wear them for a long time. He says, put your boots back on.
And then thoughts of putting socks over boots?
No, we never did anything.
So you put your boots back on?
So some of the lads put sandbags over in the mud, so they didn't slip, you know, and kept their feet pretty weird, you know, keep them a bit cleaner.
Did you black up your face?
No, very seldom. there we nearly always had a netting over our, and a bit of camouflage on our helmets, you know. The
what weapons would you take with you on a night recce patrol?
Well, I always carried a Thompson submachine gun, and then you would have a Bren gun. You'd have one and two on the Bren, and the rest would carry five rifles.
It was a section patrol, was it? A recce patrol? Your section was chosen.
Yeah, nearly all the patrols I went on was with a section. But there was one patrol I went on later where I only had to take one man, and that was a different patrol altogether.
So you were there to, as you say, try to hear things that would give you some indication of what the enemy was up to. And a dark night, it must have been quite a nervous, stressful situation being on patrol.
Well, your mouth gets a bit dry, and the slightest noise, the back of your hair might bristle up a bit. But you see, one of the things about digging, there'll be various approaches to, like I'm trying to picture in my mind when we crossed the first, did my first patrol across the Sangro. We had to cross the river, which was, we're right at the mouth of the river. It eventually came in spate and was traveling at about 20 knots. But we got across the river at the other side.
But did you wade across it?
Oh yes, it was just over knee high. Because it was wide, you see, the river was opening out and flooding the plain, more or less, the winter floods, you see. And so that it was a long walk through the wetter, of course. And then when we got to the other side, there's a road across the river and there's a railway across the river. The railway was blown, the road was blown. So you've got to think that we can utilise both roads. We can use the railroad for tanks to take them. They'll take tanks, you see. So that you're listening, see if there's any German working parties out, and what are they doing? Are they putting mines in? The various tracks that where it's obvious where the tracks look, the vehicles will come out of the water and then start to take their way up to the top of the battery onto the level of the railway line itself. So that they were the type of things which we were doing. If we came across any opposition, of course we took action.
Were you given a briefing before you set off?
Yes, yes.
And who would give you that?
The platoon officer, or the sergeant.
Did you have a map to work off?
No, no.
How did you keep direction?
Well, I'm like a pigeon.
You didn't have compass, anything of that?
No. No, I can use a compass, I can use a map. Because, you know, it's a well-known saying among the infantry, the ordinary infantrymen, when the officer gets the map out, we're going to get lost.
So you obviously were given a direction to go.
Yeah, yeah. We had a rough idea.
Timing, were you timed in and timed out? Specific
yes.
Timing?
Yes.
You?
You see, you could go down the side of the railway embankment, you come to the river's edge. And from the embankment down to the river's edge, there'll be a white tape. Now that there, you keep to the right of the white tape, there's no mines, it's been cleared. And the engineers have been across the other side, and they've done the other side too. So when you get across the other side, and you go out of the river's bed itself onto flat ground, the white tapes will still go. So you keep the white right there. But on the top, you don't know what you're going to come across, so you've got to be careful. You're on tenterhooks. You've got to be very alert.
And moving itself, how would your section move in the patrol?
Well, as the approach, well, we do the normal approach that the infantry would do in any event, if it's just a section even. You see, if a section is going to move forward, you set your Bren gun up. And he's got a point of place to fire. And then the rest of your section move up, and then they take a position, and then the Bren gun joins you. I mean, that's the normal procedure for just a short advance. I mean, it's...
But the Bren gun giving you cover?
That's right. Yes.
So on a patrol situation, when I'm talking about movement, I mean, just a line of you. How do you move forward, and how close are you to each other? It is dark.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, lots of patrols like that. I mean, from my own experience and from the experience of others, what you're doing, you're just walking into what you're going to come across.
Is it a V or a diamond formation?
Well, you spread out. Or if you're going across open ground, you spread out. You know, you should be 4 or 5 yards apart. Because, I mean, that's very important.
Do you carry a radio with you on recce?
No, the platoon had a radio, an 18 set, which had to be humped, and more often than not didn't work. We were very, very poor. I didn't have much faith in them. There was a little 18 set, and that was pretty good. You probably get some dance music on now and again.
What were the sets? An 18 set?
I forget what the field set. It was a bigger one. It was a pack about as big as the big pack, you know, what you wear on your back. And one would carry it and one would operate it from the back.
But the 18 set was smaller than that.
Just a small one, you could put on your chest, you know. But Germans, I think the German communication system was better now. And the Americans, of course, far surpassed ours.
Sticking with the patrol and night patrolling, darkness itself isn't pure darkness, is it?
No.
So you're getting shapes there and everything. It must have been difficult at the time knowing whether you were looking at anything or something.
Well, those of a nervous disposition tend to assume that a sawn-off trunk of a tree eventually is a platoon of German soldiers coming towards you. You know, they get very jumpy. And come the daylight, of course, it's only the trunk of a tree.
How do you communicate with each other? I mean, the patrol itself, do you communicate?
You're not far away, you can whisper. You can whisper, but it's amazing how many people can't whisper. You know, some people can talk very quietly, you know. But I've actually heard a man chewing biscuits, heart attack, about 20 yards away, and he went, "Oh!" And what had happened was he'd bit into the biscuits and broken his false teeth, so he had to go back out the line and get some fresh ones. Can you hear
it? As you say, this basically it's whispering when you're on patrol.
It is, you can hear.
But sounds must carry very far.
Yes, I remember one patrol in December 1943. I'd been out on patrol right up to the river to see if there was anything happening, looking for tracks in the snow. And then we made our way back and I was leading my section, and it was about 5 o'clock in the morning, and it was a lovely night, and the sun was just beginning to come up, you know, and it was so quiet. It all was still. Everybody was asleep, I think. And then all of a sudden, I heard a noise as a bolt was pulled back and then shoved forward. And a voice said something, and I'd forgotten the password.
I was going to ask you, did you have a password, out and in?
So I just said, "Gracie Fields, steak and chips, Napoleon Bonaparte, anything." I said, "Charlie Chaplin." And the voice says, "Come in, Geordie, you daft buggies." That's why soldiers wear khaki, you know. I'll never forget that. We were in a monastery then at a place called Castel di Sangro. We spent Christmas there.
Again, sticking very briefly now to patrolling itself, there must have been a building up of stress and strains if you were chosen for patrols on a very regular basis.
Well, I think once you've done one patrol, and if you've gone out with a good crew, you know, if you've got a good section or a good platoon officer or anything like that, whatever it is, whoever's accompanying you, once you see what's got to be done, you soon get experience. You learn all the time, and you've got to learn quickly. If you don't, you won't survive.
Do you remember any patrol which gave you problems?
Well, there was one particular patrol, standing patrols. You know, you go to a certain position, you take them. That might be an advantageous position which the enemy can't get. you've got to deprive them of that opportunity. So you, somebody goes in there, it's a standing patrol, and you've got to defend that position. We had such a patrol beside a river. And one of the functions of us was we had to measure the depth of the river. So someone used to go in with a stick, with a measuring stick, put it in the river, measure it, and then go back and report the company commander what it was. So imagine, like, it was 2'9" last night. So when I said, what was it last night? 2'9". So I put a stick at the edge of the water, shoved it in, and I put a mark on 2'9". Come the next morning, it was 2 inches higher. So nobody had to wade into the river. I just said it was 2'11".
Any patrols when you actually bumped the enemy that you were on?
Very briefly. They'll just a fire and then they withdraw. You see, what happens is, they've left a rear guard. You go so far. Now, all they've got to do is to fire a burst at you, and that stops you. You've got to find out how many of them are. And probably the enemy have gone. They've retreated. They've got the weapons and they're off. Another awful patrol we had outside Castel di Sangro. There was a big communal washhouse. So we would go down there and we'd stand around. You know, there was about 30 of us used to go into that. And that was a standing patrol. And we went on at 6 o'clock and we came off at 7 o'clock the next morning. And we were frozen. It was a terrible patrol. That's one of the coldest nights in my life, that. That was just all we were doing was listening. Listening and standing and listening. You know, they're very seldom, you could do a little bit of activity. Because, you see, if the enemy's got a patrol out and you start to make noise, well, he can hear you. He'll just shoot you up and throw a few grenades at you. But when you're standing there, you've got to be listening, you've got to be alert, but you haven't got to show your position. So you couldn't move about and do a bit of the old saw in action. You know, two of you together, grasp your hands and you saw in wood. That used to warm you up. But one such patrol I went on, I came back and I couldn't undo the fly on my trousers. And I wanted a wee. So I told my mate, he came across, he said, Rotterdam, I said, I want a wee now, can I get me Willie out? He says, come here. So he undid my trousers and he gave me a rub. And eventually I had a wee. He shook it and he put it back, dumped me up, and then he went and came back with a pot of cocoa. And things like that, it's hard to imagine, but that's the type of thing, that's what a comrade is. That's when the snake bites your bum, you know who your friends are.
If you were spotted, what was the immediate response to that?
Well, that's a military question, isn't it?
Did you freeze, stand still, or did you jump, weave, run, or what?
Well, I wasn't in that position.
You never
been in that,
that
position, no. Because if I'm observing, if I went out to observe, you wouldn't see me observing. It's not your job to give yourself away.
Are there strong senses?
Yes.
That you get,
yes,
when you're out like,
yes,
that, because you can't see anything.
There's funny sensations which can affect you. If it's very, very quiet, it's like a summer's night, isn't it? When everything goes quiet and still, and then the thunderstorm starts. You know, it's something like that.
Do you get a sixth sense that someone's in front of you, or there's something you're going to bump up against, or you build up a sixth sense that helps you?
Firepower can very quickly tell you what you're up against. You know, especially if there's other people joining in, like the artillery, etc. I think one of the difficulties we had was that we were probably fighting some of the best soldiers in the world.
Who were they? Obviously Germans, but do you know what unit?
Well, I went to Brigade Intelligence after the war, and I read quite a few things. Nearly every time our division went into the line, if there was a suspect division opposite, it was taken out and we got the Hermann Gorings or a parachute, and the parachuters seemed to be the lads we came up against. Lads of parachute training who were very good soldiers. Great respect for them. I don't think I could have gone through what they went through. But the...